We always talk about living our lives in chapters, right? Hi, this is Candy O'Terry. Welcome to the story behind her success. In the spotlight, an Edward R. Murrow award-winning TV journalist who decided to make a change from being a TV anchor to director of PR and media relations at Nickerson, a full-service branding, marketing, PR, and communications agency. Pretty brave move, right? Well, newsflash. That's how we learn, that's how we grow, and that's how we achieve. Her name, Shannon Miller, and this is her story. Shannon, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Candy. I'm so glad to be here.
It's so nice to be here in person with you because after watching you on television, I'm so happy to have you in the same room.
Thank you. After listening to you, I'm glad to be in the same room with you.
Paint us a picture. What's the company all about?
So, I mean, you pretty much said it in the title. We are full service. We do everything from public relations. My title is that our director of media relations and public relations. So I sort of oversee all the PR, but we do branding, we do crisis communications, we do marketing. We really run the full gamut of services, and we have people all over the country, even though we're based here in the Boston area.
You are just about to celebrate 1 year at Nickerson. So let's do a day in the life of Shannon. What is your job like? Because I'm guessing that you get to flex all your media muscles.
I do. And I think the beauty of this job, and I couldn't have known this going into it, was that I would be able to use so many of the tools that I had garnered over the past 20 years. And they use me for those strengths, which is the dream, right? You have a job where they actually look at what you're good at, and then they use you for those strengths. You know, every day is a little bit different. We work remotely, technically,
although
we have a lot of clients in the area. So we always visit our clients when we can, and we go to a lot of networking events. But a lot of meetings, a lot of PR strategy. I love when we do crisis because it's very news-like.
Female-owned, Lisa Nickerson has been a guest on the show. What is it like to work for her? She's got a big personality. She's so good at so many things.
She's a dynamo. And I had never had a female boss before in 20 years of television. I guess it's not a huge surprise, perhaps. She's an inspiration in the sense that she's 110% all the time. She's nonstop. She's go, go, go. She sets a good example. She's direct and firm with feedback, which is good because I'm in a new position. But she thinks big and she lifts you up with her, which is huge.
What, in your opinion, are the key attributes of a great leader?
You lead by example, for starters. But I think a great leader communicates effectively, doesn't tell people what to do, but shows them and brings them along with them.
Mm. The art of storytelling is so much a part of your success story. We know this as media pros, but over the last few years, the corporate world has really come on board to understand that effective communication is always about storytelling. How do you work with your clients about storytelling?
I think that's what I've brought to this agency, is always being able to hone in on what that story is, what's going to be compelling about it, and how to effectively communicate it.
The secret sauce of presenting and public speaking. How do we make ourselves memorable?
It's so hard because we have to do it all the time. Everybody, literally all the time now, with Zoom and Google Meets and everything else. And that's another part of my job, actually, helping a lot of our clients communicate effectively on screen, which, yes, is something that I've done quite a few times. It took me years, I think, to master it. And initially, you're uncomfortable doing it because you can see yourself, you can hear yourself, and it's completely unnatural. And it took me years to get back to being natural. If that makes sense.
It totally does.
So
yes.
You finally get in that comfort where you're just talking. And even if you have a script, people hear you talking, not a script.
When I started doing communications coaching about 5 years ago, I was stunned at how much wisdom I had accumulated about being a very good communicator, how to use my voice, my body to tell a story. Has this been true for you?
Yes, definitely. I think back on some of the tricks that I would do during interviews. One of my favorite things is to be silent. Sit in silence, because most people are uncomfortable in it and they will fill that silence. So if you haven't gotten the soundbite or the information that you wanted previously, just sit there, put your hand on your chin and look at them. Or if that doesn't work, I'll say, "Really?" And they'll rephrase suddenly what they were saying with more emphasis and more life. And it's just these little sort of nuances that you pick up doing many interviews over the years.
Isn't that so true? Silence is golden in so many ways, because
Very often, if as an interviewer you're willing to just wait that beat or a couple more beats to the uncomfortable place, is where the treasure comes from. Well, it's been an interesting career ride for you, Shannon, so I'd love it if we could just go back to the very beginning.
Sure.
Where were you born and raised? Tell us about your childhood.
I was born and raised in Stamford, Connecticut, in Stamford Hospital, where my grandfather was actually the chief of surgery. Both my parents had grown up in the area as well. My mom still lives in the house I grew up in Stamford, Connecticut. And I went to school next door in New Canaan until I was in eighth grade. Played a lot of soccer growing up.
So tell me a little bit about your love of soccer. When did that start? Because it's lifelong, isn't it?
It is. And it's so much more than soccer. I started as a 4 or 5 year old, and we didn't have a girls team in Stamford. So I played with the boys until I was about 10 years old. And for anyone who knows me, that checks. I was definitely a kind of scrappy tomboy young girl. And I played town, and then I played club, and then I played select team, and then ODP, and then high school, and all through college. And I'm a big proponent of kids' sports, not just soccer. For me, it was soccer. It teaches you how to function, how to win, how to lose, how to work with people, how to work with people you like, how to work with people you don't like. And I feel like soccer raised me in some ways because it really taught me so many life skills and made some of my best friends in the world playing.
What values did your parents, your family instill in you when you were growing up?
Hard work. I didn't come from a ton. My mom was a teacher, public school teacher. She's a special education evaluator now, still in the Greenwich school system. And my parents were divorced when I was young. My dad was a businessman. I got scholarships everywhere I went. And my mom was tough in some ways, but it was about you put the work in. You commit to something, you see it through. And you're only as good as your word, right? So that hard work and that dedication.
Brothers, sisters?
2 older brothers. And again, for people who know me, that checks out too. Tried out the wrestling moves on me all the time growing up. They toughened me right up.
You also attended Phillips Exeter in Andover, a very famous boarding school with students from around the world. What was that experience like for you?
It was amazing. I loved it. I know a lot of people think you went away to school when you were barely 13 years old.
Wow.
I was young for my grade to begin with.
That's so brave.
I loved it. I'm a structure girl, so I know I get up and I do the same things, and that's how I keep myself going. And it's very regimented, and I loved it. I had to rise to the occasion literally every day. I was very average there. Very average. There were some incredible kids that I went to school with, and to see some of the things that they've done in the past 20 years is amazing, too.
You went to Wellesley College. Talk about not an easy school to get into. Tell me about your college experience, and did you know at that time in your life what you wanted to do with your life?
I did not. I knew it was an amazing school. I went for the education. I got to play 2 sports while I was there, which was a bonus. It's a different type of place in the sense, obviously, it's still an all-women school. So the dynamic is a little bit different, and you kind of have to make your own way if you want to have a social life that works for you. So I had an amazing academic experience. I majored in Spanish and cinema and media studies. I got to go abroad. I met my best friend there, who was my roommate the last 3 years, who lives a mile from me now. And just incredible women who I came upon, and so different. The span of women who I met there, I think they're groups that I never would have touched maybe had I not been at a school like that. And I'm so grateful for that exposure.
You attended Emerson College. You got your master's in journalism. So beyond the fact that you had a professor who said you were a dime a dozen, tell us about that experience, because I know you were on WERS, the student-run station, which wins awards all the time. So you got yourself a real-world experience, including somebody who was tough on you. And by the way, if you can't handle that, don't go into TV or radio.
Absolutely. It was a good early lesson, for sure. You have to have thick skin. And I developed that pretty quickly. I was able to make a whole reel there and eventually get my first job, and which actually was as a producer, not as a reporter.
Well, let's talk about that, because our first jobs in our field are game changers. You went off to Fort Myers to be a writer and a producer behind the camera.
Yep.
So much to learn, right?
Oh, everything. Mm. And I'm the first person to know what I don't know. And I learn from just soaking it all in. So I might not
be a sponge.
A lot. Yes, I am a sponge. I'm being a sponge right now in my new industry because I'm learning so much. But back then I really was. I would come in on the 6th and 7th day just to shadow people because I was that into it. And I just wanted to watch people do what they did well. But I produced the evening newscast on the weekends. So I was like pretty low on the totem pole. And then I think it was a weekend evening one night, I decided I had been shadowing some reporters and I wanted to put something together. And without permission, I snuck myself into my own show.
Tell me everything.
Rather than asking for permission, right? You ask for forgiveness. And what was funny was I don't think anybody was even watching the Saturday night news on Fox 4 in Fort Myers. So I don't think that anybody would have known except that one of the other people who worked with me happened to mention something. So I eventually, it was funny because while they didn't love that I did that because I ran from the booth, timing it on air, came back, had to fix the timer again and then keep going. They did ask me to fill in as a reporter when somebody called out sick one day and they had no other option.
Isn't it so true that you also have to be ready for that moment? And when you get your chance and you're on the sidelines and someone says, okay, you're up.
Go.
It's very similar to playing soccer, isn't it? Absolutely. Putting you in right now.
Yep.
And you got to be ready.
You spend all that time preparing so that when those moments happen, you hit the ground running. You're not stuttering trying to figure out what to do. And I took every opportunity.
Let's move on to Tampa as a general assignment editor. This was where you got your shot as an anchor. Tell us that story.
Yeah, that was a legacy station. There were people who worked there for decades who were incredible journalists. And I was lucky, honestly, to even walk in that door. It still is. The man who's the news director now, and that station started as an intern and is still there. He was the assistant news director when I was there. So again, sponge. And then anytime they let me, because I was low mate on the totem pole, I was also the weekend reporter. But we had someone who was spotty on attendance on the evenings, and the producer would ask, hey, do you want to fill in? And of course I wanted to
check
fill in.
Yes or yes. Absolutely. There is no answer.
And I was terrible at first, Candy. But they gave me so many reps, and then they let me do the weekend morning show fill in all the time. And then from there, I came back to Boston. I was lucky enough to come home.
Tell us how you landed in Boston at Fox 25.
So I had actually a wonderful woman, Maria Stefanos. Perhaps you've heard of her.
We love Maria.
I owe her in part my job in Boston because she was the evening anchor at what was Fox 25 at the time. She's also an Emerson alum, and I was hooked up with her that way, and she had been looking at my tape. Nope, not good enough. Send it back. Redo it. Send it back.
But she was willing to look at your tape for you and give you critiques.
Over and over again until she finally thought it was good enough and I'm going to pass it on. Pass it on. I know. This is why I say, I always turn around and help because I had I didn't get where I got on my own at all. But she got me up for an interview. And I remember standing in the big studio there, and it's like a big open newsroom. And I thought that they were going to have me sit behind an anchor desk. And instead, they put me at this full body shot. And I'm in a skirt and a blazer, and I'm already mic'd up at that point, and I guess I'm not realizing it. And I say to myself, I'm suddenly very aware of the fact that I didn't shave my legs this morning. And everybody heard me. I didn't know this still. So I'm like, dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. Go through the whole audition. The assistant news director later tells me, that's when we knew we wanted you. Because you were real and relatable and everybody cracked up. I'm like, I'm glad my hairy legs could crack you guys up.
Serendipitous, right?
Yes.
But, I want to talk for a minute about women helping women. Because the same thing happened for me. I had so many female role models in radio who took me under their wing. I had never interviewed anybody. I had never done any of the... I'm a singer. That's how I got into radio. And they taught me everything that I know. And it sounds like you've had the kindness of other women to lift you up.
A lot. Truly, from the beginning, at the first station that I was at in Fort Myers, I had colleagues who were my equals, who knew things that I didn't, who were always willing to share. And then I had people like Maria Stefanos. She didn't have to do that. But every step along the way, I had at least someone who, usually more than one person, who was willing to look at my work, help me out, constructive criticism, or let me go with them somewhere and teach me how to do something. And that's how I came along. I didn't do it by myself.
Let's talk about some huge stories that you've covered as an anchor along the way, because, something big happens in the world and suddenly you're in front of a camera and you're telling people big things.
I can think of a few off the top of my head. The night Osama bin Laden was killed in that raid, it was a Sunday night, and I was the weekend anchor at Fox 25. And I was literally on the air when they were telling me in my ear that the president was going to come on, and whether it was tape, live to tape or live. I can't remember at the time, but talk about a major moment in history. And here I am, 28, 29 years old, in the Boston market, the first person at my station to say something like that. And I just remember the gravity of it. And almost the weight of it, the responsibility that I felt, not that everybody was watching on a Sunday night, but that type of news that everybody knew about, and it was something that affected everybody, especially after 9/11, was just, it was really moving to be able to talk about that with people and be at work on the night that that happened.
I remember being on the air throughout the entire Boston Marathon bombing, and I learned that I needed to just pause for a minute and take a breath. And of course, on the radio, you're just hearing the sound of my voice. You're not seeing me.
Right.
And I guess that's where I'm going to go with you. You're being seen and heard. You're 28 years old. How do you center yourself? How do you get ready to do something like that, Shannon?
One of the things that's always served me well, and maybe this is just genetically, I'm missing the freak out gene. It's hard to rattle me. And I think I knew early on that it's okay to take a beat, especially when it's live breaking news. No one's going to expect you to speak perfectly and eloquently, especially when something as serious as that is happening.
In real time.
In real time. So nobody expects a perfect sentence and delivery when we're all sort of digesting it at the same time. But I used to love stuff like that because of that, because I don't get that. It's not that I don't get the adrenaline rush. I just, my body manages it really well, and I'm able to think really clearly in those moments. And I think that's what made me somewhat successful at it.
What a gift. Doing mornings is exhausting. We were both doing mornings. I figured this out. Me on the radio here in Boston, you on television. I could show up in my pajamas, and as long as I sounded okay, nobody saw what I looked like. How do you put yourself together at 3 o'clock in the morning?
Through that shift, I had two children. My alarm would go off. When it started, it was only 3 hours. Now it's like 6 hours. And I would have to get up at 2 a.m. And then, because I had like a half an hour drive to get to Dedham. So I would get up, I would shower, and I would drive in, and I would do my own makeup. This is the other thing. People thought we had like teams of makeup people.
Yeah.
So I would show up in, you know, sweats, and I would just quickly, I got really fast at doing my own makeup and my hair. And then I sat next to one of my favorite human beings for a bunch of years, Jean Levanchy, who's still a good friend of mine. We used to kind of joke that because I was pregnant twice through that shift, that my babies knew his voice best because I sat next to him talking all the time. But that show, as grueling as the hours were, it was a wonderful group of people, and it was so fun. It was one of the most fun shows I had ever been on, and that's what got us through every day. And yes, sometimes, at least to me, I was like, I look like I haven't slept, but that's what makeup's for.
Two questions about news anchors. I have been told that everything about you is analyzed beyond your ability to do the news and to anchor and to write. It's about what you wear, how you look, your hair, your weight, your entire appearance. Is this true? And if so, how did you handle that?
I don't care what anybody says. It's true. It is. It's a visual medium. And while I think it's gotten better, I still think inherently people judge. And for whatever reason, especially with the advent of social media, people feel like they can say whatever they want to you from the comfort of their mother's basement. So it's one of those things where, yes, you have to develop a thick skin. I think I did that as a child. So I think I didn't necessarily have a personality where I was hugely affected by it, but I'd be lying if I said it didn't affect me. I grew up with a really healthy body image, especially playing sports, so that part of it didn't affect me so much. But the way I sort of looked at it was, you're never going to please everybody, right? So don't try.
These days, stations and anchors seem to be on one side or the other of the political agenda. When you were studying journalism, what did you learn about how to cover news without prejudice?
It's difficult because I think it's really hard to put everything that you think aside and find a way to say something without any kind of influence. It's almost impossible sometimes. I think I did a pretty good job of doing that, but I think you have to be able to look at things from another perspective. And, you know, whether it's empathy, understanding, whatever, you have to be able to look at, there's more than two sides to every story, right? You have to be able to look at something from every side. It is a big responsibility. And I think we mostly did it very well.
You've mentioned your kids a couple times. You now have three children. Tell me, Shannon, how did motherhood change you as a person?
I mean, it's not about me anymore in so many ways. I'm actually only now starting to get back to doing things for myself. My oldest is 11.
Oh.
11, 9, and 6.
Oh, my.
Boy, girl, boy.
Oh, boy. You were in the trenches for a while, weren't you?
Let me tell you, yes. And working on a morning show, it was like, what else are you going to do to yourself? your priorities change. And it was ultimately a big part of why I switched what I was doing, because they were getting off the bus. And when they were suddenly all school age, and I was going into work, and then I was driving home after doing the 6 p.m. to put them to bed, and then driving back to work at 9 p.m. to do the 11, and then coming home at midnight, and then getting up at 6. And I was like, what am I doing?
You don't know whether you're coming or going.
I didn't,
you know,
for 7 solid years. And I said to myself, you know, a number of things went into it, but that was a big part of it. It was like, I can be a more present mother, and even more present mother. I've always been a present mother by being home when they need me at home.
You are a 2-time Boston Marathon runner. What is it like to run the marathon?
Oh,
please tell us all about it.
So it was kind of a trip, because the first time around, I trained and trained and trained, and then the pandemic hit and they made it virtual. So I ran a virtual marathon for the first time.
How do you do that?
Literally, my friend, who was a colleague of mine from NBC, we trained, and then his wife, bless her heart, we started at the beginning, no one else there, and she drove ahead of us in her Mini Cooper with like color-coded cups for each of us the entire 26.2 miles until we got to the finish, and the two of us ran the Boston Virtual Marathon together. He's still a really good friend of mine. But then I said to myself, okay, I need to do this for real. I can't believe I just did that and this is what happened.
Right.
So the first time around, I did it for the David Ortiz Children's Fund and raised a little over $10,000 for them.
Huge.
Such a trip. And for me, it was even layered, because Wellesley College is the halfway point. So for all the years that I stood there as a drunk college girl waving and yelling at people, I was now sober, running by to finish an amazing thing.
It came full circle,
totally,
right?
Full circle. So it was an incredible experience. I enjoyed, and I soaked it in when I did it the second time around with humans. And I did it a lot slower that time, because I literally would stop and like I was live tweeting and taking videos, and it was amazing. I loved it. I might do it again. I'm thinking about it.
You know, we've talked an awful lot about your mindset and your energy level. And I'm wondering, where does your work ethic come from?
I mean, I do think my mother instilled hard work in me, but I also think a lot of it is just in my gut.
It's how you're wired?
It's how I'm wired. I have a hard time sitting down and just not doing anything when I know that there's stuff I can be doing. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I thrive on making things happen and getting somewhere with something.
Next three questions we ask everybody who sits where you are. So now you're in the hot seat. When an obstacle is in your path, how do you get around it?
Crowdsourcing. Find great people who can help you get past it and work smart, not hard.
What is the best piece of advice you've ever received? And can you pass that along to our listeners today?
If you don't like it, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. You can't control what other people are going to do, but you can control how you are going to react to it. And it basically, for me, that boils down to there's always a way.
I believe that we live our lives in chapters, Shannon. So right now, in this really exciting chapter of your life, what does success mean to you? How do you define success?
Right now, in this chapter, it's growth. Because I'm in a new thing, and I have a lot to learn, and I've already done pretty well at it, but I know I have a lot more to learn. So for me, it's growth right now.
I want to say thank you so much for coming in and sitting down and sharing the story of your incredible career.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
And that's the story behind her success for this week. My thanks to Shannon Mallaire, Director of PR and Media Relations at Nickerson. Find out more about this full-service branding, marketing, PR, and communications agency. Just go to NickersonCOS.com. Follow Shannon on Twitter at Shannon K. Mallaire. And thank you so much for listening. I'm always on the lookout for the next person to profile. So if you know someone I should feature on the show, will you please reach out and nominate her today? Just go to my website, CandyOterry.com. That's Candy with a Y. OTERRY.com. I'll have a new inspiring story for you next week. And remember, when we lift each other up, we all rise. What's your story? I can't wait to hear it.